Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, our topic says fixing soil compaction, Darren, but I don't think we can fully fix soil compaction, but we certainly are going to talk about how can you reduce the amount of soil compaction and reduce the negative yield impacts that we very commonly see.
We're just out in a field before the radio show today, and we finally got some moisture, and there was some tillage done in this particular field. And I thought, wow, we could actually do some decent tillage out here to deal with some of the compaction issues that got created this year. And you may say, oh, Darren, what are you doing in the field if you created some compaction earlier this year? You're always going to create some compaction whenever you're bringing equipment in. You just hope to limit it to where those wheel tracks are at, and you hope to not get in there too until the field is pretty well fit, so you're not creating major compaction out there. But when you have a year like this year for our farm, it was super dry. The ground got hard. It wasn't even necessarily that you drove over stuff. In some cases, it's just kind of good to freshen things up every once in a while.
Well, yeah, it can be, but there are a lot of people who are going to say, well, I want to never till out there. How can I fix my compaction then? And that's where we start getting into cover crops and just what is your cropping rotation. But the other thing is, what compaction are we creating with our trips out in the field? If you are out there when it's too wet, that's the real big problem that I see. When it's drier, then we're typically causing fewer issues, not more. So I'm always happy when it's relatively dry in the fall because we do run out there with big equipment. Just think about combines, grain carts, the tractors that we're running, even trucks that end up out in the field. Heck, even the pickup that will drive out there to do soil testing. I mean, there are a lot of vehicles that are running over that field in the fall. We do some fall spraying even. So when it's drier, and in our area of the United States, it typically is a lot drier in the fall than it is in the spring. And so that's part of the reason why we try to get all these trips done in the fall, so then we don't have to do as much in the spring when it's usually a little more questionable.
And you mentioned that we can't really completely ever eliminate soil compaction, but if we can start off a year where we can go in and, all right, we've gotten the compaction dealt with from the past, now we're starting fresh, that's a good spot to be in, and we've got a lot more even environment as we're running our planter or a drill through the field for each of those plants to come up. We were talking about it too today, Brian, and I said, man, I wish that right behind any wheel that goes in the field, we could just have some sort of tiny little tillage that could break up any compaction that wheel may have caused, and it would be neat. Maybe there will be something down the road and some way of doing this, but it's tough because that first pass through the field is where most of the compaction is created. And with all the fall work getting done this year, the first pass is probably going to be with the planter in a lot of these fields. And like you mentioned, you got to be pretty careful about what you're doing behind that planter. In a 30-inch row, maybe you could get away with it.
Yeah, but see, there again, why do you have to till all the time? You don't. And that's my whole point. If we can figure out how to reduce compaction overall, maybe we go with tracks. Maybe we lower the tire pressure on our wheels. Maybe we have more tires out there, more axles to spread the load. I mean, there are a lot of ways to handle this. I'm still going to come back to, we want to have the best condition possible when we're out in the field making whatever trip we're going to make. So to me, that a lot of times is going to start with, I got to have good drainage. Another thing I'm going to think a lot about is calcium. We want you to have more than 65% calcium on that base saturation test. That's telling us you've got a good proportion of calcium in your soil compared to the other nutrients like magnesium. So if, let's say, you tend more to the magnesium end, you got a lot of magnesium and not a lot of calcium, your soil is much more likely to be compacted. The reason why is calcium is big. Think about calcium as this big molecule, and then magnesium is really small. Well, you can pack a whole bunch of those small ones in, and then because of that, you don't end up with good pore space there. If you have lots of calcium, there's more pore space. That basically just means we can get more oxygen down through that soil. Your soil is going to compact less, and so that's really what we're after. So yeah, I'm thinking tiling first, I'm thinking calcium next, and then on top of that, I want to think about how do I build my overall soil organic matter levels. The more organic matter you have, the more that soil kind of reacts as a sponge, the more it's resistant, or at least tolerant to compaction. So those are probably the key factors I would think about.
Well, when you look at, and I like the approach, because when we think about soil compaction, it's so clearly a physical characteristic that's out in the soil, but we don't think about that chemistry side of things, that, hey, if we get our nutrients balanced right, that can actually set us up to be able to tolerate things. And we talk right. about building organic matter up very often. A lot of farmers will talk about how important that is, and they can just feel this almost spongy feeling out in their soil. Our field day site is one spot where I've gotten that comment a lot from people from all over. Wow, it just feels pretty spongy here. And a good part of that reason is that we've built up organic matter through that part of that field.
Sodium is another thing that can really be detrimental to soil. So when you've got a sodic soil, or in some cases even a saline soil, these are problems. We want to get the soil, like Darren said, balanced out, get the right levels of nutrients there, and then we just see less overall soil compaction. So we're going to talk about fixing soil compaction, or at least reducing it, all throughout the show today. If you've got any questions for us, or if you'd like to discuss this topic with us, just give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag a little bit later in the show. But yeah, with this whole compaction thing, it's top of mind right now for us, and it probably is for you as well, because this is the time of year where a lot of people are going to be out there doing tillage and reducing, or at least hopefully reducing, that compaction that has been created in the soil. Last thing I'll leave you with before we take our first break of the day is you got to find out where the compaction is. How deep is it actually in your soil? So Darren a lot of times will carry a little spade out in the field. I mean, a lot of people will use penetrometers. You can just dig around a little bit, see how deep that is. Make sure you're running your tillage right below that compaction layer. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about how you can fix soil compaction in your fields on today's program. We're also going to take your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can always email us as well, radio@agphd.com. Let's head to the phone lines. We got CJ Parker with us right now with Case IH. I'm sure he's a busy person at this point in time. CJ, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on today.
All right, we started talking right at the beginning of the show, and Brian said, we're going to talk about fixing soil or eliminating soil compaction, and it's like, wait a second, we're probably never going to 100% eliminate it out there, but if we can at least manage it and try and do the best job we can, that's a big step forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I think, the last two or three falls, depending on where you're at, haven't been real good on giving anybody some field time to go out there and take care of any of that compaction. So
No, you're right. We've had such short falls that when we get a year like this year where harvest gets done early and guys have some time, and here we go, we're getting a pretty nice week of weather across much of North America. It's an opportunity, and we've got to take advantage.
Yep, absolutely. I know the farmer I grew up on in eastern Central Illinois, I know we've got some fields where we've had a lot of water ponding even this past spring, and I know we got some fields there that talking with my cousin definitely need some attention here this fall, and I think that's exactly the plan here going into this month, and it looks like we're going to have some nice weather to get some field work done as well too.
Excellent. Now, talk to us about this. Say we've got compaction and we feel it's mainly confined to the top 5 inches or so of soil, but it's pretty even across a field. What types of tillage tools would you recommend to break that up?
Well, at Case IH, we offer a variety of different tillage tools. Of course, our 2500 inline ripper for them guys that want to be more of a minimum till type situation. That works pretty good, pretty much leaves that residue intact on the surface. And then, of course, our 875 Econo Tiger, which is a combo primary, which is going to do something to that residue with a disc up front to help incorporate that in to manage the residue. And I know at Case IH we get a lot of attention on our 875, but it does take some horsepower to pull it. We also offer our 527B. For them customers in that lower horsepower range as well, too.
And one of the things we were waiting on this fall, because everything was moving along fast on our farm, we were waiting for some moisture. We were really dry, and I know Brian was really big on this, like, man, it is going to take so much horsepower to pull through some of these soils when they're this dry. We need to wait and catch some moisture, which fortunately we did. How about for the guys that haven't caught that moisture where it's really, really dry? Do you have any different recommendations for them?
And I ran into that, especially in harder soils. 2012 was pretty rough. If you're having a hard time getting that tillage tool to go in the ground, I've cheated just a little bit and kind of working with that level adjustment to maybe have that tool go a little bit forward, have it tilt a little bit forward to allow them shanks and then points to go into the ground. I would say if you're going into dry conditions, make sure you have plenty of points on hand to replace. The drier the soil, the more abrasive it is, and the faster you're going to wear them points out. But I also think, too, part of the reason why that tillage tool is so hard to pull in drier conditions is we're getting a lot more fracture when that soil is drier and actually getting more work done underneath there as opposed to going in when it's super wet. You're not really getting a whole lot of the bang for the buck when you're going into saturated soils to relieve that compaction.
You mentioned we mentioned the last couple of years that we just haven't had a good fall to get in there. And in some of those fields, we've seen some deeper wheel tracks that I noticed a lot of fields guys just kind of scraped across and filled them in just to get a crop in the ground this year. What do we do about that long term? Is that where that inline ripper works better?
It probably could. I get that question all the time, whether on how deep to go, and the headlands and places where we're seeing a lot of traffic. A lot of people think that compaction is deeper. From what I've found, it's not necessarily any deeper. We were in a field a few years ago here in Northwest Ohio, in a cornfield, found that compaction layer at about 9 inches. They just got done harvesting their carrots across the road. So saw a lot of truck traffic on that field. We went over there with our spade, and it took a lot more power to and force to get that shovel through the ground. But at the end of the day, we still found that bottom of it at 9 inches. What happened, at least what I saw, that compaction layer itself, the soil aggregates were a lot more tighter and bonded together, and it was more compact up to the top of the surface as what we saw compared to the cornfield.
There's definitely a lot of situations that we're running into around the country. We're talking with CJ Parker here with Case IH. CJ, thank you so much. Really appreciate you joining us. I know you're super busy right now, but thanks for what you do, and good luck here the rest of the fall.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. We've got Noah Nelson with us with Nelson Ag Drainage over in Minnesota. Noah, I know CJ kind of got into this a little bit, that when conditions are a little too wet, compaction is a lot more likely. And I know you're one of those guys out there trying to make sure conditions don't get too wet for a lot of farmers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wet fields and heavy equipment is a bad recipe for, or a good recipe for compaction, I guess I should say. The tiles seems to sure help that, though.
I know you guys have had a really busy fall, and through a lot of the area that you cover, you have had a couple of wet years, and you finally got a little bit of relief from that this year. What are you seeing out there? Are you seeing some of those issues that guys need to be back out dealing with, or have most of the guys been able to get through the fields and try and fix things up?
You know, a little bit of everything. We had a lot of the last couple of years, like you said, have been really tough. We've run into a lot of problems, and it's just the older systems are really showing their age now, and trying to get them fixed. So them guys that have had issues are, even in a drier year like this, are showing up issues, you know, even this year. So, you know, we're doing a lot of fixing and a lot of reinstallations of, you know, 100-year-old systems. In a dry year, it pays also.
I know one thing, as we're talking about this topic of compaction, I've heard many growers saying, my tile lines weren't working until I dealt with my compaction, and as soon as I broke through that layer, my tile started flowing again. Have you seen that in your experience?
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of little potholes here and there that, actually I can think of a couple on our own farm that have tile in them. And generally I don't like to run a ripper when it's real wet, so we haven't been able to address them the last couple of years, and they've gotten compacted and the tile doesn't work, you know, up to its full capacity when you got a lot of compaction. But if you can break through that layer and get the water down to the tile, it's amazing the difference.
All right. I know that we've talked to that you've got some growers that are going with a narrower spacing on their pattern tile. Did you notice a difference coming through 2018, 2019 into this year with those narrow spacings?
Yeah. You know, it just seemed like anytime you get that water off faster, and narrow spacing absolutely helps. I had a few guys call me and say, hey, I think we might want to do some splits here and there. A lot of them were 60, 70-foot spacings, and we want to split them on 30s or 35s just because you get a crazy year like last year, and tile was, it sure doesn't take long to pay for it.
No, that's for sure. We're talking with Noah Nelson here with Nelson Ag Drainage over in Minnesota. You got everything off the farm? Got everything harvested, Noah?
We actually just finished corn last night about 9 o'clock. So we're a little bit of tillage left, and we're full bore tile and mill. So.
Outstanding. Well, Noah, stay safe. Enjoy the good weather this week. Hopefully you guys get a lot done. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Talking about fixing soil compaction on our show today and taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Pentair Hypro Express Flush Valve reduces plugged nozzles and improves cleanout of your spray boom. Simply flush boom sections with a quarter-turn ball valve and leave your tools in the cab. Plus, installation is easy. Simply remove the existing end cap plug and replace with the Hypro Express Flush Valve. Learn more at Pentair.com/Hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Get tough on herbicide-resistant weeds. Add Tough 5-EC into your post-emergence tank mix and increase control of some of the toughest to kill herbicide-resistant weeds that plague corn, such as Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide with an underutilized mode of action that provides faster kill and application flexibility for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BelchamUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. Today we've been talking about fixing or reducing soil compaction. And I mean, as a farmer, you've undoubtedly been thinking about this. You've been talked to about this for years. I guess a lot of this is just the same stuff that you're always going to hear. It's stay out of the fields when it's wet. It's reduce your tire pressure, and in some cases go to tracks. Just do anything you can to reduce that one point that's causing that compaction, the number of pounds, that PSI. If you can reduce that, that's a good thing. And Darren made a good comment earlier in the show saying the first trip over the field, that's what causes the most compaction. So in other words, that's why we want to try to, as best we can, control traffic in the field, follow the same paths, and then you only have just a few spots to go back over. Rather than driving all over the field, angles, everything else, that does cause a lot of issues. I talked to our people on our farm about that this fall too, and just showed them, hey, somebody drove at an angle going across the field. Look at this. So I don't know if it was with a grain cart or what it was, but I just said, we just don't want to do that because now we're going to have an issue. Even if we go out and do tillage right in that spot, you'll see it on the planter. It's really interesting now that we have things like Precision Planting has done where you can see the change in your down pressure as you go throughout the field. And if you look at those maps and you look at them closely, it's very common where you can see, oh, somebody must have driven at an angle here across that field. So we want to try to reduce those things as much as we can. In terms of actually fixing soil compaction or reducing it, once it's there, we have talked a lot about straight shanks, narrow points, get down deep in the ground, find out how deep your compaction is, get just below that. And a lot of times there's a man-made compaction layer, might be at 4 inches, 6 inches, 8 inches deep. It's however deep you've been running tillage before. And then the other one is a natural compaction layer that sometimes you'll find at 14, 18, 20 inches deep. If we get below both of those and just cut some slices there, we get a lot more roots down in the ground. But in terms of these man-made compaction layers, that's why we say vary your tillage depth. Just vary your tillage depth. If you're constantly, year after year after year, always running at 8 inches, for example, what you're going to do is you're going to settle those fines out down to 8 inches deep. And if you say, well, I'll go to deep tillage then. I'll do everything, you know, for years at 12 inches deep. Okay, well, all you're going to do is move it down to 12 inches then. Keep varying it. Keep checking on your farm. And then hopefully you can do some good things to reduce that compaction, get more roots going, and really increase yields. All right, it's time now for the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag.
All right, Brian, got some soil tests here. This is from Lucas in northeast Nebraska. He said, we've got some hilly ground, and it's our third year farming this ground. We did corn this year, and we didn't have samples, so we just applied 175 pounds of N, 52 pounds of P, dry spread, pre-emerge, and then did some liquid side dress. Obviously, we dried out, but we came out overall happy. Our hilltops, though, were really our weakness this year. We did about 5 acre zone samples here that I pulled a couple weeks ago. Here's 0 to 6 inch samples. Where it says hills or top, that's where we did bad. Where it says bottom or middle, that's where we did good. Now I see on some of those we've got a high enough pH or hilltops that don't appear to have much soil on them, but they are pretty high in calcium. I'm wondering, would we just add magnesium and potassium in that ground? Also, I notice we're low on micros across the board. Just wondering, where does a guy start? We'd love to get even yield across the field and have 200 bushel corn, but obviously we got some hills to deal with.
Yeah, and here's the challenge with hills. It just takes a tremendous amount of time to get those things fixed again. Because let's face it, I mean, our grandpas, if you go way back, or maybe great grandpas, had to do tillage. We didn't have good enough herbicides. We didn't have good enough equipment. They had to till. And so there are a lot of hilltops that got eroded. That's just the way it is. So to build that back up, it's going to take a long time. But certainly there are always things you can do. So we always look first at pH. I mean, there's nothing on the low end of things that I would probably raise. Yeah, you've got a 6, but, you know, 6, boy, that isn't much. So if I was going to lime, it'd be a tiny, tiny little bit. You know, once I get past that pH, and yeah, you have a couple of high pH spots, you're also low on sulfur, and you're low on sulfur across the board. So anywhere where my pH is high at all, I'm going to use elemental sulfur rather than some sulfate form, because that hopefully will drive that pH down a little bit. You're low on potassium in most cases, got a lot of 2s and 3s, and where you said magnesium, you got a couple spots that are short on magnesium, so you could certainly run with a product like K-Mag where you get both potassium and magnesium out there. In addition to that, a lot of the micronutrients are just really low. Copper's at 1 part per million, boron's at 0.5 part per million. And then certainly I'll go back to the phosphorus thing that he had already mentioned. Phosphorus is low everywhere. The highest we got here is 16 on a P1 phosphorus or 10 on an Olsen test. So it's real, real low. So yeah, I'm going to figure out some way to get some phosphorus out there. Oh, Darren, let me make one last comment. He's got as high as 169 parts per mil, or sorry, pounds per acre, 169 pounds per acre of carryover nitrate. Carryover nitrate. That's a lot. So what that tells me is,
in which sample? Is it in sample 7? Okay.
In the bottom.
Okay. That's this last question you had. The test number 7 is a 12-acre field that we're breaking from alfalfa.
That was 23 pounds of nitrate.
Okay. So you said in test 7, we're thinking about going soybeans in there, or do you think corn would be a better fit for the first year coming out of alfalfa in that ground?
I don't care. You can do either one. If you go soybeans, though, make sure it's dicamba or 2,4-D-tolerant soybeans. Otherwise, you're going to have a problem killing the volunteers.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We got Dave Sender with us with Environmental Tillage Systems, the Soil Warrior guys. Dave, how you doing?
Good. I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Well, pretty well. Okay, we're talking about compaction on today's show, and we do a lot of strip-till on our farm. We get a lot of strip-till questions as well. If you've got a compacted field and you're going to be doing strip-till out there, give us your recommendations.
Well, it depends on what you're going to have for equipment, but I'll obviously speak specifically about Soil Warrior. We've got a couple different ways of battling that. One, if a guy has his deep cogwheel, we could look at doing a deep cogwheel pass in the fall. Take advantage of that and put some P and K down while you're doing that. You're going to get a lot of vertical fracturing and even some horizontal fracturing with that. And then come back in the spring with your wavy culture set up and hit it then. If you don't have the cogwheel, you don't have to fear about that. You can also run those wavies in the fall as well. Perhaps maybe if you've got some real tough compaction, maybe you do want to look at doing a second pass in the spring. But you know, regardless of that, you're still with the way that those cultures work, whether it's the cogwheel or the wavy cultures, you're still going to have that fracturing that's happening well beyond where, as I like to say, well beyond where that iron is touching the ground, just because of the action, the way that those cultures work. And that coupled with, you know, going back to, you know, soil health and things of that nature, that's really what's going to be breaking up your compaction over time.
Dave, we got about a minute left before a break. With dry soils this fall, are you changing any of your recommendations up with strip-till?
Not per se. I mean, really what it's going to come up with is really how you're adjusting your machine to battle some of those drier conditions. In a lot of areas that I work in, we fortunately end up getting moisture, a lot of it in the way of snow, but nonetheless, that really kind of softened things up. But before we got that moisture, we were dealing with some dry conditions, and we did have to set the machines up a little bit differently, whether it was pitching the toolbar, changing some of the air pressures on the row units. But at the end of the day, we were still getting the penetration and the depths that we wanted, and we're still able to break up that compaction.
Yeah, it's a big challenge out there in fields where there is compaction. Strip-till is a viable option and can do a really nice job. We've got Dave Sender on right now with Environmental Tillage Systems. Dave, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck this fall.
You bet, guys. Thank you. Have a good one.
Talking about fixing soil compaction on the show, and we're also taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like marestail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
The next big thing is here. From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with ExtendFlex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop, and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, and that's exactly what Terry did, radio at agphd.com. Terry's questions here. First of all, he goes, I'm sending a soil test from one of my farms, 5-acre grids, also tissue tests, wondering about if I can build my K up to 5% on this ground, if you think that would work, and also wondering about what's going to happen to magnesium and calcium percentages when I do. I think this is the soil test here, Brian. I think you got the tissue test.
Oh, yep, I do.
There's a couple of tissue tests there and one soil test that has two different samples on it.
Yep, sounds good. All right, what was the cation exchange capacity? There it is, in the middle.
Yeah, it's in the 10 to 15 range, I think.
11.3 and 16 for cation exchange capacity. So the first question was, can I build my soil test level to 5%? Yeah, there's no reason why you can't. You're at 3.1, you're at 2.7 on K. And when you're talking about medium textured soils, because that's how I would describe it when you're at an 11.3 and a 16, it doesn't take that much potassium to get that level up to 4, 5, 6%. It's not that big a deal. And you're starting at not a terrible level. You're around 3% right now. So, yep, you're going to need to add some. And, you know, you can do that in one shot. You can work in a build program over the next 3-4 years, however you want to do it. All I know is potassium is absolutely a yield limiting factor for you right now. So I'd make sure I'm getting some more out there. What was the next question?
What's going to happen with calcium and magnesium percentages as he tries to boost his K?
Well, in base saturation, it's a ratio of potassium to the other nutrients. It's a ratio of each of those nutrients to each other. So there's potassium, magnesium, calcium, hydrogen, and sodium. So first of all, the base saturation is not figured correctly on this soil test because there's no sodium even listed here. So you've got to make sure that you get the sodium in there. So I would tell you that your numbers aren't perfectly accurate, but usually sodium is quite low. So that's the first thing. The second thing is on your first test where it's a 7.2 pH, the hydrogen's already at zero. You don't even list any sodium there, but we'd like to find that out. But yeah, the only other two things left to change are calcium and magnesium. So if potassium goes up, that means the other two have to go down. And what's going to go down first is probably the magnesium. But some of the calcium will most likely go down a little bit as well. With the other one where hydrogen is down at the bottom, you know, I don't know if you're doing any liming or anything like that. You don't need much if you did any. And I would tell you that hydrogen factor looks really high to me because your pH says 6.1 and yet your hydrogen base saturation percentage says 22.4. That's too high. It's not 22.4. I'll tell you that right now. But anyway, I wouldn't get too worried about it. I would just say, look, you got plenty of magnesium already in your soil anyway. You have plenty of calcium. So I would just put the potassium out there, and it will lower the magnesium and calcium just a little bit, but it's very minor, very minor.
All right, thanks for the questions. We appreciate that. Thanks for sending in those tests, too. That's really helpful. Got this from Travis. He said, I farm in Ohio, and I was raising 3.8 maturity Extend soybeans. My yield history over the last 3 years is 67 bushels in 2018. We were extremely wet in 2019, only got 47 bushels, and we got 71 bushels this year. I wanted you to take a look at my soil sampling here and see what I should do. These are I thought he said 5-acre grids here at one point. He said, it's my third season. I've been applying 200 pounds of potash, 100 pounds of MAP every year, and I've had beans all 3 years because corn is kind of expensive for me to pencil out right now. It's family-owned ground that I hope to own someday. Now, he doesn't say what the sample size is here, so maybe I...
Okay, but anyway, it doesn't matter. What's the question?
What he should do for fertility there. He's raising soybeans.
Okay, so... First of all, I would say he did a good thing by putting out more potassium than phosphorus. A lot of people think, oh, the crop needs lots of phosphorus, and it does, but soybeans just need so much more potassium. So let's take 70 bushel beans just for example. Grain removal only, it's 84 pounds of K2O potassium, just the grain removal. I'm not figuring the stover or anything else, just grain removal. So when those 70 bushels leave the field, 84 pounds of K2O potassium said goodbye. On phosphate, it's 51 pounds. So here's my point. He's putting out 100 pounds of, whether it was MAP or DAP, I don't remember what she said, but the point is he's removing 100% of that. It's all gone. But the K2O potassium, he's on a little bit of a build program, and he needs to be in a build program because we've got a lot of ones, twos, threes on base saturation K. That's too low. That's absolutely hurting your yield if you don't get started on a build program. And he was, and that's probably why he's getting the kind of yield that he's getting. So beyond that, you know, so once we're managing, I'll say too, there, like every soil test, there are a lot of, there's a lot of variability. So we've got some spots as high as 107 parts per million on phosphorus, and we've got other spots 5 parts per million or 6 parts per million. So I'm going to start working on some variable rate out there because once you're at 100 parts per million of phosphorus, here, let me just give you this example. Okay, so we're at 100 parts per million on P1 available phosphorus in one spot in the field. And in the same spot, we're at 1.4 parts per million of copper. So for anybody listening, and you might think, well, how does this apply to me? Here's a perfect example. If you put more phosphorus on when you've already got 107 parts per million of phosphorus and you only have 1.4 parts per million of copper, you're going to most likely hurt your yield. Also in the same spot, we got 2.4 parts per million of zinc. So the ratios we're typically talking about with phosphorus to zinc, it's 10 to 1. So if I'm at 100 on phosphorus, that means I need to be 10 on zinc and he's 2.4. It's 30 to 1 roughly on phosphorus to copper. So if I'm at 100 on phosphorus, I need to be, you know, somewhere around 3 parts per million on copper, and he's at 1.4. So those are real problems. In addition to that, I would look at boron. I'm definitely low on boron. And while soybeans don't take a lot of boron, they definitely need some. And corn crops take a lot more boron. So I'm going to be working on those at least a little bit. And granted, this soil isn't the heaviest. I mean, it's medium to heavy in terms of texture. So cation exchange capacity, 12 up to 21, 22. But so you can't hold it forever. But you need to do something with boron. You need to do a little bit with sulfur. You need some zinc. You need a little bit of copper. I mean, there are many things that absolutely can and should be addressed here. You don't have to get carried away on any of those things. But yeah, I'm going to do some variable rate fertilizer so I don't continue to overdo it on my phosphorus in those spots where I'm already at 100.
All right, thanks for the questions. Got this from Tom in Southwest Indiana. He said, I'm starting to make a spreadsheet on Excel with our soil test results and comparing them to yield that we got from those points.
Oh, nice.
And I was hoping
exactly
that you could send me
about
a sample of how you set yours up. How did you make it? What are your columns and rows, formulas, and so forth to analyze the yield? Also wondering what some of the good ratios of elements that you're looking for are. Most of our soils are silt loam and silty clay loam, a few acres loamy fine sand.
Okay, so where he's going with this, it's something we've been talking about for the last couple of years. This will be our third year now where we're doing 1-acre grids on our farm in part for this reason. So we have more data points so we can figure out best how to truly fertilize, because there's nobody that can tell you exactly on your farm what you need for P, K, zinc, copper, all these different things. But when you get enough data, you can figure it out yourself. You can see it because it will chart it out for you. So using an Excel spreadsheet, it's awesome. Okay, so just real quickly, here's what I would suggest. You've got all these soil tests, and they're on this spreadsheet, just like you said. So then what we do is we overlay our grid map for soil testing with the yield map. And with the yield map, we've got it so we can just hover over different yield points, and it'll show up, oh, this was 179, or this was 192, or whatever the yield would happen to be. And so to the closest yield point there, next to that soil test point, we just type into the Excel spreadsheet whatever that yield would happen to be for that grid point. And then you can just let Excel run its calculations and charts, and then you can start doing ratios, everything else. It's awesome. We'll talk more about that right after this break. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to effective herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Burnmaster, Scorch, and Spitfire for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Just wrapping the show up here today. We were talking right before the break about this comparison between your soil test grid points and the yield data that you've got there. So like I was saying earlier, this is our third year now where we've done this, and we're doing it on 1 acre grids. You can do it on 5 acre grids too. It doesn't matter. The point is, when you soil sample, don't ever forget this is the way you soil sample. You drive to a GPS point. So I don't care if you're on zones or grids. I don't care if it's, well, I prefer it small, but if it has to be big, whatever. But the point is, you do a GPS point. You drive right to that, and you take a couple of soil cores, 2 to 3 soil cores, on the left side, the right side, the back, the front of the vehicle. So you just literally walk around the vehicle, pull your soil cores, done. That's it. The reason why you want to do that is, number one, it's repeatable. Number two, it's so now we have a spot where we can reference for yield. So when you overlay your yield map with that, and I'm giving you the manual version of how you do this, you just hover over it with your mouse, and you've got all this data there, and it will show you, all right, here's my yield for that point. And then you just type that into your Excel spreadsheet where you have all this soil test data. So then you can create charts. And so I'm just looking at our information from last fall, for example. So let's see. Let me give you a base saturation potassium is one we've been talking about a couple times here on the show already today. So basically, we plot out yield versus base saturation K. And the trend line is the higher the base saturation K, the higher the yield. So then I don't have to be an expert in soil fertility to know, oh, I get the best yields where my base saturation K is over 4%. So then I say, all right, I'm just going to fertilize, so I do that. So now I've let the data guide me instead of taking somebody's recommendation or instead of just buying what the fertilizer dealer has to sell you, I'm making changes on my farm based on my own data. It's powerful. And the other thing is, he asked about ratios. So we talked just a little bit ago about 10 to 1 phosphorus to zinc. We talked about 30 to 1 phosphorus to copper. Did I just pull those numbers out of the air? No. I got my own yield data showing me if I literally do those things, I have higher yield. So it's such a learning tool, such a valuable tool for helping you invest your fertilizer dollars. And anybody can do it. It doesn't matter. And you can have, again, big grids, small grids, whatever you want, big zones, small zones. It's just, I like having 1 acre grids, so then we just have a lot more data. So then we, as somebody who's trying to provide information to you, can tell you, oh, we had over 2,000 grid points we did this on last year, and over 2,000 we did this on the year before. We did some in corn, some in beans. This fall, I'm not sure exactly what we'll have, but I don't think we'll quite get to 3,000, but we'll probably have over 2,500 points. We farm about 3,200 acres, but I mean, this is just tremendous information, and I would encourage you to do this. And yeah, you're not going to do it today when you're busy and you're finishing harvest, you're doing tillage, you're spreading fertilizer, whatever. But over the wintertime, it's not that tough to put these things together. But you've got to have good soil test data, and you got to be able to overlay your map in terms of yield with that map on where you took the soil test data. So anyway, powerful stuff, and I would encourage everybody to do it.
All right, great question there, and kudos to you for taking on that on your farm. I think it'll be a big deal. Okay, I get this from Russ in Nebraska. He's got some irrigated corn on corn, and he's going to plant about 36,000 population, puts on 4 to 5 gallons of 1034-0 with this planter, shoots for 320 bushel corn. This year only did 260-270 bushel corn.
Only.
Well,
if you get a little, that's pretty good. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, he said, here's the current plant. He sent a manure sample, sent a soil sample, and a field map. He's going to put manure on at different rates in different quadrants here in the field map. So he's got some that's irrigated, some that's not irrigated. He's got 2 quadrants there that they're going to put on 28 tons per acre manure.
No.
And then 2 that they want to put on 18 tons per acre manure. And they're going to work it in with a Case 875 disc ripper. And then they're going to put gypsum on in a quadrant because they've got high magnesium. They're going to leave that on top. And then also do fall anhydrous 200 pounds per acre of N.
Okay. Let's run some quick math. And I was hollering no right away. And here's why. Every ton of manure, there are
19 pounds of phosphate. Of
phosphate.
25 pounds of K2O potassium, 9 pounds of total N.
Okay, so if we have 19 on phosphate, and what'd you say? How many tons?
28 tons in 28 the one tons. Quadrant, or in 2 quadrants, and 18 tons in there. So 28 times 19.
That's 532 pounds of phosphate. How is he going to put that on? Is he going to bury it, I hope?
Yes, they're going to disc rip it.
That's not what I mean by burying it. You got to get it way deeper than that. So if you're going to put it on 12 inches deep, I'm on board. But here's my problem. Okay, right now our phosphorus level, he's got one spot that, which quadrant was he going to put the 28?
2 and 3.
Oh, okay, where he's a little bit lower on phosphorus. All right, so he's got available 51 parts per million of phosphorus. So I got to multiply that times 2.3. So I'm already at 117 parts per million of phosphate. Multiply that times 2. I got 235 pounds of phosphate. So if he does that, he's going to end up with 767 pounds of phosphate there. That's a lot in the top 6 inches. I'm just concerned that we're getting too much at the soil surface. If I could bury it, I wouldn't mind it so much, but it's a lot. Now, I get why he's doing it, because he doesn't have all that much on the, the nitrogen. So the nitrogen level is pretty low.
On 28 tons, there'd be 252 pounds of total N, and 162 pounds where he does 18 tons, but that's two.
Wait. You said total N, first year availability.
There's 9 tons of
Nine
pounds of total N, 2 pounds ammonium form, 7 pounds organic form.
Yeah, but the total N is actually 25 per ton. So there's going to be a lot of nitrogen in there for future years. So basically, if it's going to go corn on corn, I could see it. But here's the next thing that you got to look at. We were just talking about this where your zinc levels aren't in ratio with your phosphorus. You're going to put all that out there, and I'm concerned about phosphorus. I'm concerned about copper. I'm just concerned about micronutrients and how you're going to do. So let me look at the, what does he have here for zinc? Yeah, there is some zinc, and there is tiny, tiny bit of copper. I was curious about the copper, because sometimes in manure you'll have really high levels of copper. We don't have that here. So my point is, if you want to go that high, which I would not advise you to do, I would go lower. If it was me, I'd spread it out on more acres. I think you'll come out ahead. Because here's my next concern, salt. I'm worried about salt. How much salt are you going to get when you start throwing out 18 to 20 to 28 tons? And what they talk about right on your manure test, they say total manure salts should not exceed 500 pounds per acre. Okay, it says right on here, total salts is 82 pounds per ton. Okay, so if you're going to go 82 and you're going to put on 28, now we are getting out, let's see, I'm doing the math here, 2,300 pounds of salt. And it says right on your test, don't exceed 500. And you should be even less than 500 if you have annual rainfall 25 inches or less. I'm not ever going to advise you to put that much on. It's too much salt. It's too much phosphorus. You're going to create nutrient imbalances. You're going to have issues out there. So, nope, I would not do that. Cut her back and you're fine. Spread it out over more acres and you're fine. And bury a bunch and you're fine.
Keep in mind, they were talking about putting on 200 pounds of anhydrous as well. So you put 200 pounds on plus 252 pounds of just the first year availability on that high rate, that's 452 pounds in.
Yeah, so it's way too much.
That's way too much. Yeah, yep. And I think, you know, the challenge here too, and if it's ground that just hasn't had manure and all of a sudden you've got access to manure, I understand the idea of, man, this is my shot. I'm going to load it up.
Yep.
But like Brian was saying, you can really get out of balance that way too.
Out of balance and the salt issue. And that's the big problem. We've hurt ourselves by doing that. So I'm speaking from firsthand experience. We have been way ahead to take the same manure, spread it out over 2 or 3 times the number of acres, supplement with commercial fertilizer, and we've ended up with a lot better yield and a lot healthier soil. That would be our suggestion.
All right. Thanks for the question, too. We really appreciate that. And it's really good when you've got manure samples, field samples, and so forth, just to kind of get a full picture of what's going on out there. And that's what we'd encourage you to do. If you're working with manure, make sure you take a complete sample and understand what you're dealing with for a fertility product. Thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.